You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Talk is about to begin. Hey, 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 come on in.
Welcome back to the Tuesday Buckeye Talk. Doug Lamorese and Nathan Barrett. Guess what? A little more rapid fire. Did it on Monday. We're actually recording this like several hours after we recorded the Monday pod. We did the Monday pod. We put it up Monday. We now do the Tuesday pod on Monday. That's how we do it here at Buckeye Talk. We are going to dig in, Nathan, a little bit more on some transfer stuff, because in between recording the Monday pod and the Tuesday pod, Ohio State did have a transfer. Jacoby Cowan, good defensive lineman, who just, he even said it in what he posted on social media about it. Pandemic and an injury. And it just kind of got him off track. And at Ohio State, if you get off track, you're often going to get passed. And it feels like that's just what happened here to this guy. And he's going to go try to find a place where he can play.
Yeah. I mean, he wasn't able to surpass some of the more veteran people ahead of him. You know, your Zach Harrison, your Devontae Jean-Baptiste, your Tyler Fridays. And then when you start bringing in guys of the caliber of JT Tuimoloau and Jack Sawyer, and Cowan has, I think, had some reps inside too, but the same applies. You're not pushing ahead of the veterans there, and the young guys are catching up quick. And then obviously the dynamic that's happened in that room a little bit, specifically as it relates to defensive ends, but Mitchell Melton moving up there, the spring Caden Curry had. You said it earlier today when we were talking more vaguely about transfers, that not everybody's going to get on the field. And that was just kind of the situation he found himself in, and seems like a good opportunity, you know, for him to find somewhere else where there is more opportunity.
So again, not a huge surprise. We knew this would happen. It's, I guess, is it the third transfer of the spring, Nathan, with Shaw and Cavazos?
Yes, and you can even go back to before the spring with Darian Henry Young also moving. So it's really been four since January.
Okay, and that does what for the roster numbers at this point for them?
Right now, according to what we believe to be the scholarship count, they have 87. That's including Mitch Rossi. That's including Jake Seibert, who we assume would still be on scholarship unless they have to make some sort of change there because of numbers. But okay. Right now, 87, they obviously have to be down to 85 to start the year.
Okay, so that leads us into a question. Again, we're doing rapid fire. I got 10 pulled here. It's going to be heavy on sort of playing time, transfers, how players figure this stuff out. And then we're going to talk about baseball for a second, and then some safety stuff at the end, some nitty gritty about where guys are going to fit. But this is more of a big picture question. And again, I like when people ask nitty gritty, and I like when people ask big picture, because that's the best way to cover a team. The middle is boring. You want to go in tight with a microscope, and then you want to get in the jet plane and go to 30,000 feet. And that's how you can analyze your team. From the 216, do you think it's best for certain players to realize transferring is what's best for their career? No matter what the staff is telling players like Mayan Williams and Julian Fleming, they are going to be second options. And in Fleming's case, the third or fourth option. He could be a star at Georgia or Penn State, and Mayan could be a beast at a place like Cincinnati. So I'm kind of in the more and more we get into the portal world, Nathan, we've been here for a couple of years now. I'm easing off like my old thing of like, I don't want to speculate too much about guys' careers, whatever, because it's just so common now. It's not a big deal. And you wind up just playing the roster game. And so I'm not as afraid to put things out there. I think the interesting conversation to me here, because there's some, let me do two companion questions here. From the 440, what is more likely, that Julian Fleming will see the field this fall or enter the transfer portal? And then from the 734, what do you think of Court Williams possibly transferring? Seems like it could be trending that way. And then also from the 937, are we certain Julian Fleming is just dinged up again? I'm always waiting for the next likely contributor to leave, and I feel like he would be the guy that I would dread the most. So listen, you guys are just playing the game that anybody does. That actually happens on the team. You find guys who maybe aren't playing as much as they thought, and then you look at who's ahead of them that's older or the same age, and you look at who's coming behind them, and you try to see if there are guys who are going to get squeezed. I'll finish my overall point here, and then we can dig in more on this. I think the guys that we're seeing move right now, I think this is the move time in the portal world. It's after the spring of you've had two full falls, and now it's the spring. So it's like in the middle of your second and third year. Because as a thing that we always said it with Urban Meyer, he said the first 2 years on the coaching staff, the third year's on the player. If you get through spring, and it's like the spring of your third year, and you don't feel like you have a role, I think you owe it to yourself to really think about it. And I think, so let's look at, that would be the class of 2020. Julian Fleming is the class of 2020. G. Scott is the class of 2020. Mookie Cooper, already transferred. Darian Henry Young, already transferred. Jacoby Cowan, just transferred. Court Williams is the class of 2020. Ryan Watts, already transferred. Jack Miller, already can't transfer. Legend Cavazos, already transferred. Grant Tutant is in that class. Some of these lower-rated offensive linemen. Mayan Williams is in this class. Jacob James, Trey LaRue. I think that's six guys from this class who've already transferred, and not some of them not right now. Ryan Watts has been gone for a while. But this is the transfer time. I think this is when it makes the most sense. And I think when you look at numbers and things like this, I think there's some proof of this is when it happens.
It definitely applies. I mean, and someone like, I know Bryson Shaw isn't on that list that you just said, but someone else of those guys that have left since January, it's about getting to a juncture of your career where you can see progress in front of you or not. And I think all those guys,
right.
Yeah, all those guys that we've talked about, those four guys since January, Cavazos, Shaw, Cowan, Henry Young, I think those guys can all help teams win football games. Power Five conference teams win football games. They just weren't going to play very much at Ohio State in 2022 and probably 2023. I think that's almost the crucial thing, because there's guys we're going to talk about here, and we've already talked about some in other contexts where you say, you know what, if you just hang out, and it's usually not guys who are already third year, it's more like second year guys, but like if you just hang out for one more year, you're back up for one more year, and then the seas part, and now it's your opportunity. That opportunity is really in front of you. You're in position to move up ahead because you're already really good. There's just somebody else that's better or more experienced, whatever, ahead of you. That wasn't the case for any of those four guys. They were all still going to be behind next year because of the people who are ahead of them right now are so young.
And in this, and why in situations like this, this is like the very specific window to me, which is why, for instance, I don't think it's unreasonable to talk about Mayan Williams or Julian Fleming or Court Williams in this context. We don't have any indication that any of those three guys are looking to transfer. As far as we know, they're just dinged up. It's fine. Mayan Williams was out there. He's their second team running back right now. But it's all to me in the poorer world, Nathan, where you don't have to sit out a year. It's really a compliment. It's that you're too good to sit. And you are at the point where sitting so far has made sense. And it's just it's your first 2 years in college. The first year, you're just figuring it out. The second year, you got a bunch of old guys ahead of you. Man, completely reasonable to not play that much in year one and two. But now, if you're getting to year three and you don't see the path to the field, and spring football can be that time that can be really enlightening for you. How'd it go in spring? I'm still behind a bunch of guys. Or, man, there's a guy younger than me that they loved this spring. I think he's come. This is the time, and it is a compliment. Derrigan Henry Young, he went before spring, right? Mm-hmm. He's at Kentucky, and we've mentioned on the spot, feels like he has a role, right? I mean, like, great, good player. Went to the SEC. These guys aren't transferring to Division III schools. Go help an SEC team and get on the field and play. Have fun. Playing's fun. Give yourself an opportunity to get to the NFL. I do think you reach this point, Nathan. And so it's why I think it's just reasonable speculation. Now, one of the things is I think Julian Fleming has a path to the field. So if the question, the one question that was, what's more likely, that Fleming plays this fall or that he transfers? I think it's much more likely that he plays. Yes. Because he is one of their top four receivers, and they'll play multiple receivers. They rotate when they want to rotate. It's not, even if he is their fourth receiver, and I don't know if he is or not, but even if he is, that's a role. That's a real role, and I think he'll play. So he is not on the top of my personal list of, is Julian Fleming looking to transfer? Because, yes, maybe he could go be a number one somewhere else, but he's going to play for the best passing team in the country.
Exactly. I agree with you. I thought that they're far more likely that he plays this fall. Listen, I'm skeptical, and I had my say about the way that Ohio State has handled its availability report as it relates to the spring game. People can go back and listen to Monday's pod to hear that. But I'll take them at their word that he has been banged up or whatever. Same with Court Williams. And that they just didn't want to put him out there that day, that's fine. They don't necessarily, I guess, have a lot to gain. Almost our curiosity probably had more to gain than Ohio State did after seeing him for as much as he did in 14 practices. So I didn't necessarily take that as like transfer alert, I guess, that he didn't play. But I understand why people wonder about him, just because we haven't seen – you're getting into a group of guys who – at least you're hearing about them behind the scenes, though. At least Brian Hartline has things to say about Julian Fleming and why he's coming along. Maybe only because he gets asked about him more. But those guys talk about Julian Fleming. They talk about Court Williams. There's other guys on this list of people who transferred who never got brought up that way in passing or with the same kind of conviction from the coaching staff. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Bryson Shaw being the example or the exception. They talked a lot. The coaching staff was, I thought, very complimentary of the job Bryson Shaw did last year. And that probably, maybe it was true. And that's why Bryson Shaw decided he didn't want to be a backup again this year. I understand that, but there's other guys, as I was putting this list together of guys who've left since 2019, since I got here. And a lot of them were, you know, players who you just weren't hearing that buzz about them ever. And I think, it further evidence to why it was probably time for them to leave. And similarly, as I was putting that list together, there were guys who I thought, oh man, I don't remember where this guy transferred. And I went and looked, I'm like, oh, he didn't. Like, he was just a guy who spent 4 years here and never really played. But that's kind of gets to your point that there, it's got to be both sometimes. That sometimes you know that you're a backup, you ride your career out and you go on to the next stage of your life. But there's other guys, as we've talked about before, it feels like that, like 160 through like late 200s is the sweet spot for that. Mm-hmm. And it's why you're seeing, I mean, all these guys that are transferring right now, it feels like fit into that sweet spot. Colby Cowan's the latest.
You reach a point in your career where you have to decide what matters to you more, that I want to play or that I want to be a Buckeye. Because when they come here, you're assuming both. Hey, I'm a Buckeye and I'm going to play. But when you have to make that choice, that's a tough choice. And there's not a wrong choice. As you kind of said, hey, man, I'm a backup at Ohio State. I love it here. I love the university. I love my teammates. I love the facilities. I love the uniforms. I love the shoe. I'm going to try at pro day and stuff, but like, I'm maybe getting an idea that I'm not sure I'm going to make my living playing football. but man, do I love this for 4 years. Holy moly. Or five. Why would I give this up? Great choice. Or, hey, man, I'm a really good football player. I'm really good. I happen to have All-American candidates standing in my way, but I got to go because I want to get to the league. I want the thrill of starting. I want the thrill of putting up numbers and making exciting plays and getting cheers for me. I got to go. I don't want to go, but I have to go. That's a very real choice for a lot of guys. It's a very personal choice. So it's like we can speculate about it, but you don't know what a guy thinks, right? You don't know. And neither of those is wrong, but it's a tough decision when you realize being a Buckeye and playing, you might not be able to do both. You might have to choose one.
Right. And let's talk about Jacoby Cowan in particular. Let's use him as an example here. There's how many Power Five programs are there? I can't remember off the top of my head. Like
65.
65. Okay. So 65, if you were to like parcel out the top 200 players of every class, that would mean like on average, about three of them went to each of those 65 programs. We know that doesn't happen though. There are a lot of programs who do not get top 200 prospects. So Jacoby Cowan and Darian Henry Young and Legend Cavazos, they come here, you give it your best shot at Ohio State. You get to go directly from here and be the biggest offseason addition to a program potentially. Like we'll use my example from my previous life, Purdue, to get like a top 200 guy to just walk in off the street, they'd lose their minds. Like it just doesn't really happen there. That's why Ohio State's supposed to beat Purdue all the time and usually does. Like that's how college football works. So as a wise man once said, actually he's not that wise of a man, but someone once astutely said, there's no such thing as a good marriage that ends in divorce. Like that, you know what I mean? Like there's nobody who's like married and both sides, it's working out great for both sides and everybody, it's the perfect thing for both entities and they just decide to get a divorce. Like that doesn't happen. Like there's a problem or there's something is off. Like the share of the benefit of the relationship is off. And I think that's what's happening here. Like there's nothing wrong with Ohio State. There's nothing wrong with Jacoby Cowan, but this isn't the right fit anymore. So he goes and finds a better fit.
When you said the Cher, I thought you were going to say the Cher and the Sonny. They were married and then they got divorced. I didn't know you were going there.
Speaking of like really old white references that we can make on this, if Stephen were here, he'd be ringing the bell.
Ringing the bell.
Ferocity.
I will say, and this is more common than the other thing, because looking at the 25 player class from 2020, do you know how many guys in that class, as we head into their third year of college football, are 100% locked in, no doubt about it starters? And we talk about all the time, your third year guys are who make you go, right? So you know how many third year guys are sure things for Ohio State in 2022? Do you want to actually guess?
The 2020 class? Well, I can try to count them out. Jackson Smith and Jigba.
That's one.
CJ Stroud.
That's two.
Oy.
Offensive line.
Paris Johnson.
And one more.
Is it on defense?
It's on offense. Luke Whipler.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those are four sure thing starters. They already have had six guys transfer. So there's only four sure things. Because guess what? Julian Fleming, I mean, he's going to have a role. He might not start. He's not going to play every snap. Cody Simon, he should have a role. We don't know exactly what it is. Court Williams, we don't know. Lathan Ransom, we don't know. Cam Martinez, probably backing up Tanner McAllister. We're not exactly sure. Mitchell Melton seems like we'll have a role. Joe Royer seems like probably the number two tight end. Josh Fryer might be the sixth offensive lineman. Myron Williams might be the backup running back. Ty Hamilton, he's in the defensive tackle rotation. You know, this was a good class. It was a fifth line class in the country. But entering year three, they have more guys who left than guys who are, oh, I'm 1,000% happy because I play every snap. And then they have a bunch of guys in between. So anybody in between, you can't blame anybody if you want more. Because guess what? It's hard here. It's difficult here. So this is just the reality. But I do think in the end, Nathan, in the old world, I think we try to be very cognizant of guys getting run off, of guys being forced to transfer when they didn't want to. Because when you transferred, it was sort of like, man, like, oh, now you got to leave and you got to sit out a year and whatever. Now I almost think it can be more dangerous for guys to hang on too long in search of something that's not going to happen. And they lose a year. It's like, man, oh, if you would have gone, you could have had 2 years at that school or 3 years at that school and really established yourself. And now you've been here 4 years and you never found a role. And now you're looking for a one-year transfer. That, like, best of luck to Jacoby Cowan. And I did a story during the pandemic about parents of Ohio State players who suddenly found their sons at home when they never expected that. And Jacoby Cowan's mom, she was lovely, was one of the people I talked to. And she was talking about, I sent my son off. I thought, like, I was going to go visit him every 3 weeks. I was preparing myself for this. He's my son. I'd never gone through this. And then all of a sudden he's home. She said, oh, he's drinking water and he's eating vegetables. And he was doing everything he could in the pandemic to keep himself in shape. But especially this class, man, these guys had it tough. This wasn't normal. This wasn't typical. And then he got hurt. So then really, especially if something went wrong, that was sort of out of your control. And it's just like, man, I just think I might need to try something else. Cause like, it's just a little off here. Jacoby Cowan didn't do anything wrong. And I'm not going to pretend that we know every in and out of his situation. The fact that he announced his transfer on Monday, that feels right to me. Best of luck to him. I think he made a difficult but smart decision for himself. And I think he will go somewhere and play college football and get on the field and probably help the team that he joins.
Yeah. I mean, just looking back through the spring game, I don't remember whether he actually played or not. I know he didn't have any tackles. He was on the roster. Like, it just, he had become kind of a person who wasn't just in your mind right now for Ohio State, but he can go somewhere else and be very present for them. By the way, just to kind of to go back on that point I was making, that 2020 class had five players who were ranked between 150 and 200, basically just right after 200. Darian Henry Young, Jacoby Cowan, Court Williams, Lathan Ransom, and Ryan Watts. And like, and four of those guys were out of state guys, like more national recruits, and three of them are already gone.
And that's the harder thing too. If you're not an Ohio kid, it's hard to be away from home and not play. Ramps it up. So the one thing I also want is, if this is back to the 937 question, when they said, I'm always waiting for the next likely contributor to leave. And I feel like Julian Fleming would be the guy I would dread the most. So every transfer, there's two things you think about. And you've got to think about the player first, because every young man gets one life, one career, one shot at this. The program has existed for more than a century. Ohio State football will be fine. So you have to think about the player, because they're more important than the program in these situations. So we just covered the player's standpoint, right? Players have to make difficult decisions that are best for them. From a program standpoint, it's interesting to me to hear a texter say, I'm always waiting for the next likely contributor to leave. Because Nathan, my instinct is, in the portal world, Ohio State has not really been hurt. You know, Jermaine Burton was like Georgia's best receiver, the national championship game, and left and went to the team that they lost to, right? Now, Joe Burrow, that's before the portal. He was a grad transfer, so he could play right away. That's a little pre this era, but like, did that even hurt Ohio State? It's not like their starting quarterback left, right? That the idea of a transfer hurting Ohio State, that actually, Nathan, is something that, so far, like, I don't spend a lot of time thinking about.
Yeah, it's pretty foreign. And the only one that you would say right now would even maybe fall into that category, and it didn't really hurt Ohio State. I mean, Jameson Williams went off and had this amazing season at Alabama. You cannot possibly argue that it hurt Ohio State. They had three guys who were just putting up a billion yards without him. Like, so I went back, I looked, and these are all the guys who we think – this is just scholarship guys who have left since I got here in 2019. And that was right before the start of the portal too. I can't remember exactly when the portal went into effect. I think it was after the 2019 season at some time. But anyway, after 2019 season, Alex Williams, defensive end, wide receiver Jalen Gill, safety Brendan White. You could argue, I suppose, that Brendan White could have helped Ohio State last year. But
I mean, he left maybe, because,
but only because Josh Proctor got hurt. Josh Proctor never gets hurt. We never say Brendan White's name again. Probably.
It's like he left because they played two safeties. He played. They switched to a one safety defense. Basically, his position was the one that vanished. And he was like, right, okay, I guess I'll leave. You right. Eliminated my position. It's like journalism. You eliminated my position. And then when they kind of went back to more two safety looks, it was like, oh, well, he's just like, well, you eliminated the job. Now there are three safety team. But yes, so he was a good player for Rutgers, but I think it's a good point. But it's not like Ohio State didn't get to where they wanted to go because they didn't have Brendan White. And it's not like they didn't get there because of Jamison Williams.
I don't know that they beat either Oregon or Michigan if Brendan White is still on the roster, I guess is the best point to make there. After 2020 season, Jamison Williams, Tyreek Johnson, cornerback, and two offensive linemen, Ryan Jacoby and Max Ray. So again, still waiting, other than Jamison Williams. But again, him being here at Ohio State last year doesn't change, I don't think, much of anything that happens.
And this is no slight to any of these players.
Absolutely,
but it's just
not
the reality of the point that we're trying to make is most of the people who have left Ohio State are leaving because they can't get on the field at Ohio State. They're not leaving because they're Ohio State stars and they want something better.
It's a point I've been making as it relates to Kyle McCord all this time. It's that if there's any chance at all that you can still start for Ohio State, then whatever you would be choosing to do instead has to be so much better than that.
Right.
And so the idea of like Kyle McCord transferring to like Rutgers, where his dad played, to start, but be at Rutgers, isn't better than waiting it out a year and maybe being the starter at Ohio State on this collection of talent that they have in 23. Do you understand? So anyway, keeping the list going, this is pre or during the 2021 season. Craig Young, safety slash whatever you want to call him, a couple linebackers, Dallas Gant and Kayvon Pope, noticeably. Cormonte Hamilton, defensive line. The quarterbacks, Jack Miller and Quinn Ewers, and cornerback Ryan Watts. So that was either things that happened during the 2021 season, which is the linebackers, or like immediately after the season, or like during bowl season. Some guy like Watts went in the portal, I think, in December. The quarterbacks went in the portal in December or right after the Michigan game. So we'll see, I guess, with Quinn Ewers, if he becomes so good. But I also, Ohio State also isn't like they're left with scraps at quarterback.
No, that would be the one that's interesting to think about. But he left after CJ was a Heisman finalist. So it's like, okay, well, you know, and yep. CJ's back. So yeah, even that, it'll be – that one still always on hold, because assuming CJ goes to the NFL after this season, and you have to see Quinn Ewers, if he's the starting quarterback at Texas this year, you have to see what the 2023 season looks like. It's possible. And again, I've said, I think Ohio State needed to do a better job keeping him here. Ohio State needed to make him comfortable. I know it was all, we've covered that, but it's not just like, oh, well, yeah, number one recruit in the country, we're fine. I mean, I don't buy that on any level. And they, you know, whatever, if he, I get it. It may have been a bit of a wonky fit, but then you took him and he was the number one recruit in the country and he left before you even got a really chance to see it. So that one is to be determined, I would say. But it's also very possible that CJ Stroud like wins the Heisman this year as Ohio State goes to the playoff, and Kyle McCord comes in next year and is like, oh, Kyle McCord's one of the five best quarterbacks in college football. It actually will be a sidelight. 2023 season, who's better, Kyle McCord or Quinn Ewers, will be a fun little thing to follow.
Yep, and we will. That's what we said at the time that Quinn Ewers left. Like the quarterbacks that they have, whoever's quarterbacking for them for the next couple years is going to get paired to Quinn Ewers. But I think it's very possible that Kyle McCord is better than him in 2023. That's certainly on the table. And then the four that I mentioned that have left since January, Cavazzo, Shaw, Cowan, and Henry Young. Now compare that to who Ohio State has gained. Even if you take out Justin Fields and take out Jonah Jackson, who were pre-portal, Trey Sermon, Paliye Neitote, who hasn't really had a chance to do much here yet, Noah Ruggles, and then the ones we don't know yet, but Chip Traynham, who is kind of running with the twos right now at linebacker, and Tanner McAllister, who might be your starting nickel in this new safety or this new defense that Jim Knowles is doing. So, I mean, the balance of the portal is still, I think, pretty heavy in Ohio State's favor.
Yeah, because, and again, we're not counting Joe Burrow and the portal stuff, but again, he got beat out. The thing that is going to be the absolute game changer for college football that will set the sport on fire, and I actually do think it will happen, and I continue to downplay the NIL stuff, Notre Dame just set up an NIL collective the other day, headlined, I think on Monday, headlined by Brady Quinn. There's a second collective at Ohio State that has been set up. They're being set up all over the place. We get it. The game changer, the absolute game changer, is when Bryce Young wins the Heisman and transfers to Texas. That's going to change the game. Why? Oh, because I got a better NIL deal from some other school. There wasn't anything wrong. I don't hate my coach. I don't hate the program. I just got, they got word to me, and I shouldn't even use Bryce Young. All American X. Can you imagine if a guy who everyone thought was going to, who's been a good player at Ohio State, is expected to be one of Ohio State's five best players, transferred to USC or transferred to Georgia or to Alabama, right? Can you imagine, not that Jameson Williams transferred to Alabama, but Chris Olave transferred to Alabama? I think that's coming. And when that arrives, I don't think people are going to like it. When players start leaving one powerhouse for another powerhouse, for why? Well, no reason. Well, then it's NIL. So that, but at the moment, like, we aren't, from the Ohio State perspective, and listen, this is Buckeye talk. You guys are Ohio State fans. Whatever happens elsewhere happens. Like, we're not close to that yet. So at the moment, transfer portal, a plus for Ohio State.
Yeah, I think it's just an important perspective to keep in mind as far as this feeling, this dread about who might leave.
Yeah.
Because the guy, whoever leaves, is not about to play a lot of football for Ohio State usually. That's it. That just hasn't equated yet. Maybe when it does, then worry about it, when that precedent has maybe been set. But I understand. I'm not trying to dig on the fans, no, because I also think Fleming is the best example of the guy. I mean, he's the number one prospect in the country. He's a super likable guy. Like, if anybody's ever watched an interview with Julian Fleming, he seems smart and personable, and like, he really does care, and he's trying to play football for Ohio State. So I think people see that. They see the talent that's clearly there, and they want to see it realized. So I guess I understand that. But at that point, if he were to leave because, or anybody is to leave who is similarly ranked and heralded, and they still leave, it's the thing that you're losing is not that player that you thought was going to be there. It's what they actually turned out to be.
Right.
It's Tyreek. When Tyreek Johnson left, you weren't losing what that five-star cornerback or safety, whatever he could have been, was supposed to be. You were losing what he was, which is a guy who was not playing football for you.
Right. You're losing what you thought they would have been or could have been, but what they were like, wasn't quite good enough. And so far at Ohio State, the reason guys are leaving is because other guys are better. Again, the national champs, Jermaine Burton, probably would be Georgia's number one receiver this year. Instead, he's going to be Alabama's number one receiver. That's jacked. I don't love that. I don't. Again, we've had that discussion, but I don't love NBA players changing teams from year to year to year to year. That is just kind of weird to me. So that's not where Ohio State is. So again, I think that's, you're right, Nathan. The main point is, if you're listening to this, don't dread anything. Like, it'll be okay. And actually hope that guys who maybe aren't getting as much playing time as they want for whatever reason come to a decision either way that makes them happy and that they're comfortable with, because it is not easy. This is your future, man. It's not an easy decision. So for the moment, I think it's easy for Ohio State fans to support whatever these guys do, because it's not like the best Buckeyes are walking out the door.
But we should make a very quick caveat. Depth is important too. And in the specific case of the receivers, if one of those top four were to leave, I think there may be a gap. And then if something else happens, that's where you see it show up. I do understand that.
I do. I understand that as well, but like, you could have said that last year. Jameson Williams, if he wouldn't have been a top three guy last year, would have been a top four guy. And then it's like, well, Garrett Wilson didn't play against Nebraska. And then their passing offense was kind of clunky against Nebraska. And they kind of danced around with losing that game, right? So, if they had Jameson Williams, would they have beaten Nebraska by more. I mean, it's not an unimportant point to make, but it does not rise to the level of offseason dread. Don't dread it. Well, don't dread it until it happens. Will it eventually happen? Maybe, but I don't think it's coming anytime soon. This is a couple more along the lines here, more Mayan Williams specific, and I'll lump these together again from the 440. Do you think both Mayan Williams and Evan Pryor will be on the roster in the fall? A somewhat similar question from the 419. Actually, this is not a similar question. I'm going to hold that, but I am going to do a Mayan Williams question from the 515. Friends, when talking about the backup running back position, I feel like you guys have little to no faith in Mayan Williams. He doesn't just stick his head down and run in a straight line like Master. This dude has wiggle. He broke Mitchell Melton's ankles when he bounced it out for a 20-yard gain. We saw him break it outside against Clemson with some wiggle. He averaged 7.1 yards per carry last season. There was another dude from Cincinnati who went to Iowa State and ended as a third-round pick. He's now a starter for the Bears, David Montgomery. He was rated in the 1200s nationally. Watch Mayan and his skills, not the rating and the circumstances as to why he's at Ohio State. So there's two questions there. One is, why are we underrating Mayan Williams? The second is, will both Mayan Williams and Evan Pryor be around? I would say I don't think Mayan Williams is a bad football player. I don't think he's as good as the best running backs at Ohio State typically are. And I would say David Montgomery is not as good as the best players at Ohio State typically are. So I know he's a starter in the NFL, but he's not Ezekiel Elliott, right? And like that's Ohio State doesn't have Ezekiel Elliott every year, but they should aim to. So if the example is David Montgomery, I would tell you David Montgomery is not the goal at Ohio State, Nathan. So I stand behind our opinion of Mayan Williams. He's not a bad running back. He's not. I do not think he is good enough to be Ohio State starting running back in a national title pursuit. And I don't know why. Again, a guy who ran for 1,200 yards at Iowa State, great. Is that our threshold? Oh, well, this guy was good at Iowa State. What are we talking about here? That's not the threshold. It's big city. So I am still curious, Nathan, why people push back when we say that we don't think Mayan Williams should be Ohio State's starting running back.
I don't remember us comparing him stylistically to Master Teague.
I have at times, and if I have, I cede the point of he's definitely got more wiggle. That is correct.
So I think we have what you're saying. We've compared their relative ceilings. And I agree with you. I would stand by that. I don't think it's a dig necessarily to say that that is exactly the guy, the kind of player that Ohio State should be glad to have as its backup running back.
So listen, this is a big backup discussion, right? To me, I would rather the backup be a young future starter, except the quarterback.
If you have that, yeah.
But you should. I mean, I think that, so it's like, oh, who's your starting running back? A really good sophomore. Who's your backup running back? A true freshman who's going to be the starter when that guy leaves. That's who I want my backup running back to be.
And
the idea of like a backup who is only ever going to be a backup, that's what I want at quarterback. Because then I don't think that guy's going to transfer. I want a guy like that on the roster. I'm not that worried about Ohio State having guys like that on the roster otherwise. You got to have special teamers, and I get it. I'm not saying you have none of those, but I think Mayan Williams is fine as the backup running back. He's not my dream backup running back.
I'll concede that point, because I think also what's happened here a little bit, and I could just talk about the time that I've been here, but 2019, you had J.K. Dobbins, and you didn't have that next dynamic starter on the roster. So Master Teague was the guy. And then going into 2020, after Dobbins leaves, you still don't have that guy on the roster because they missed in recruiting that cycle. So you have Mayan Williams and Teague until they go get Trey Sermon. So, and then even after Trevion Henderson, you could say last year, Evan Pryor wasn't going to come in and make that impact probably as a true freshman. Mayan Williams was better than him, at least as a true freshman. And that's why he had the role he did. But they haven't really had that heir apparent in place for a little while now. And that's a little sort of why Teague and Williams have gotten the opportunities they have. I think they've performed better. I was actually typically, I thought, defending Master Teague a little more than some people would back in his time here, because I thought he did what he could. It wasn't his fault that he was who he was, and he was productive when they needed, quite often when they needed him to be. Not always, not in some crucial spots, but quite often. So I think you're right that ideally, and it's about to come to a head. It's not really happening right now. This prior Williams little thing is going to be a little showcase precursor to it, but next spring is when it's potentially a big battle royale. If Williams is still here, if Pryor's still here, if they get Richard Young, if you've got Dallin Hayden and Trevion Henderson is still the man in that room, then it's a big battle.
You know, who's my ideal backup running back? Richard Young.
Yeah, that's I figured like, that's what like you're saying. Yeah,
Trevion Henderson is the starter as a junior. Richard Young is number two as a true freshman, and that's what you do. It's fine, but he's good. So, he's good. He's good. If he's your starter, it's something's off. And at the moment, he's like, it also, if he's like, if you're relying on him to get you something you need against Penn State, I'd rather have a little more juice. I just would. And it's not that he has none. It's not that he has none. And it's not that he's not a good player. And I saw the play where he cut it outside. But I also saw a play in the spring game, and I don't want to have to criticize guys, but like he had a huge hole on one play and cut on air in the hole. And I thought it looked like an 11-yard run, and he got three. And I was like, that's why. Because I think if Evan Pryor hits that hole, it's a 10-yard gain. And Mayan Williams hit it, it was a 3-yard gain. So I get it. But we just differ here. But I understand. I appreciate fans who like players like that. I'm just telling you, you better not have too many, because you know what you need to win national titles? 5 stars. Or you need guys in the 300s who don't become pretty good, who become Chris Olave, right? So, I mean, that's just what it is. But I don't know that the other question about will both Mayan and Evan be on the roster in the fall? My guess is yes.
Yeah,
what is yours?
I also would guess yes. I mean, Mayan Williams is still, I mean, it wasn't like we got to the spring game and Evan Pryor was taking the reps with the first string or was the second running back in there. It's still Mayan Williams. He's still, Evan Pryor has not surpassed him. I know people were impressed by what he did in the spring game, but again, there's also a whole spring that plays out before that. That's the reason why certain guys are going in at certain times. So I think Evan Pryor's spring game was a positive. I think it's something he can build on in the offseason. But if the season started Saturday, I would still expect Mayan Williams to be the number two running back.
Yeah, if he had been clearly passed, then I'd be on alert. But he hasn't been. Mayan Williams is the number two running back for a team that's going to try to win the national title. Pretty good. Now, maybe next year, maybe he won't make it till year four if the running back situation that you've laid out a couple times now comes true. Then maybe he'll say, man, I'm a starter. I'm going to go start somewhere. Great. Go be the starting running back somewhere else. But I think for now it's okay, but it just is, you also have to be realistic about, you need a guy that's special. You need a guy that's electric. When you get the ball at Ohio State, the expectation is electric. It has to be. That's why they don't throw the ball to the tight end that much, because the tight ends are good, but they're not electric. They're not Garrett Wilson, Jackson Smith and Jigba, Chris Olave, Trevion Henderson, electric. That's the requirement for touches. So anybody who is even a shade short of that, it's not what's expected here. All right, last thing about this. What do you think is more likely to happen from the 419? Trevion Henderson takes another huge step forward and then opts to forego his junior year to preserve himself for the NFL, or Evan Pryor takes another huge step forward and decides to go be someone else's number one running back for his junior season? Definitely the Pryor thing.
I love that we're dropping this question right after we told everybody, just don't dread anything. There's nothing to dread. We just drop in. But if you thought about whether or not he would be so good that he just wouldn't play in 2023, we'd be naive to say that no player will ever make that decision. Maybe even that no Ohio State player would ever make that decision. But Ohio State's going to be a national championship contender in 2023. And I would be shocked if Trevion Henderson just packed it in and took a year off before the NFL.
It worked for Ja'Marr Chase. It worked for Micah Parsons. There were guys that opted out of the pandemic year.
In the pandemic year, yeah.
And then went high in the NFL draft and were absolutely ready for the league on day one. I do not think we are yet there. Maybe we'll get there someday. Again, wait for college football. College football is getting a little crazy. We may get to that where that's more of a regular occurrence. Nobody has ever done that in a non-pandemic year. So the idea of, Trevion Henderson, pack it in, I don't see it.
Well, and quite honestly, no one has done it on a national championship contender, too. That's the other important factor here. Like, that LSU team wasn't going to be as good, and that Penn State team wasn't going to be Ohio State quality. So that's, I think, an important factor. I think if you're going to walk away from that kind of team success, I don't see that in Trevion Henderson's character. The other thing to remember is it's an important question to ask at the running back position, because Trevion Henderson has been smart and forthright in saying, I understand the whole concept of tread on the tires, and that's why I'm not that concerned about getting the ball X number of times and, whatever. Like, Ryan Day will figure that out. I don't mind being not worn into the ground in college because I want to play in the NFL. But number one, he didn't carry the ball that many times as a freshman. It wasn't like they loaded him up his first year in college. Number two, he already had 1 year of tread on the tires that he missed out on. Like, he didn't play his senior year of high school. So I know that's a different kind of wear and tear that you take being a high school, especially when you're Trevion Henderson and you don't get touched a lot. But it's not like you're getting beaten up on the fields of Virginia. It's just guys are looking at your butt as you're streaking down the field away from them. But I don't think that's something that people need to be really concerned about. I think Trevion Henderson plays in 2023 and plays pretty well.
And the first time it happens anywhere, we're probably not going to see it coming. It's going to be like, did you hear about the guy who won the Heisman and then sat out his junior year? It's like, okay, well, we're here now. But even like a guy like Bijan Robinson, who's entering his third year at Texas this year, who sort of just came into college again. He's the guy that Ohio State wanted him the year before Trevion. Right. He's a thick dude. He had an NFL body as a high school guy. And Texas is a little jacked up still. They had a quote from one of their veteran players this spring that was like, the culture is, they've been trying to fix the culture for a decade here. We still haven't done it. And Steve Sarkisian got mad, but it felt like the guy was probably speaking the truth. Like, if Bijan Robinson was like, I'm NFL ready. I don't know what's happening here. We still haven't figured it out at Texas. We're not winning a national title. I'm good. That fits it more than Trevion Henderson at Ohio State that seems to have a lot of things in place as competing for a national title in 2023. I think the thing you said, if you're competing for a title, it's just a different decision.
Yeah. Guys, I know we've talked about before that decision you have to make, like, how much do you love going to class or even like it? How much do you like having to follow NCAA rules about how you live your life? All those sorts of things. But you know what guys also really love? Like, winning and winning national championships seems like a hell of a lot of fun. I never got to do it, but just watching guys do it, it seems like they really enjoy it. So I think, now, are we getting into a period where guys, if a team loses twice and you have any kind of physical ailment and it's the final few weeks of the season, do you shut it down? Yeah, I think that is on the table, but that's already sort of on the table. So yeah. The thing where we're talking about, like, a guy just says, no matter what 2023 or the next year is going to be, I'm just not playing. That's a big gap to have to still cross.
And Ohio State probably had the player who did the closest thing to this in recent times, which was Nick Bosa in 2018, when Nick Bosa got hurt in the middle of game three. Ohio State was still a national title contender and he was going to miss a bunch of time. So if Nick Bosa had been healthy, Nick Bosa wasn't going to hang it up halfway through the season. But once he got hurt, it's like, okay, that's it. I'm going to be out at least 4 to 6 weeks. Well, I'm going to, that was a reality. That guy was number two pick in the draft. So, we can't pretend it doesn't happen at Ohio State. I just don't think, I don't think that's where everybody's heads are at. But the idea that Evan Pryor is gets on the field this fall and is like, whoa, that guy is practically as good as Trevion Henderson, and he's getting 9 carries a game, and Trevion Henderson's back in 2023 and some other guys are coming, and Evan Pryor's like, I got to go be the starter. That sounds completely possible to me.
Sure.
All right, let's take a quick break. We'll get back to some stuff that's not transfer talk, but we'll talk first about what we think of Major League Baseball right now. I'm Buckeye Talk. Doug and Nathan, really dug in there. Woo, took a late break because we really dug in on all that stuff. But I do want to get your take on this, Nathan. This is our one off-topic question on this version of Rapid Fire from the 804. What are your favorite sports to both watch as a fan and then as a reporter? Doug, do you enjoy adding the Browns to your reporting, both writing and podcasting? How does it affect your Ohio State work? So let's start, Nathan, first with what sport do you like to watch as a fan and what sport do you like to watch as a reporter?
For as a fan, like baseball is the reason that I got into doing all of this. Like I was just a kid that was like hooked on baseball when I was a kid, and I've never really shaken that. So it's one of those things where, you understand, like you might have a movie that you think is hilarious, but you understand why people can't watch it at all. I kind of feel that way about baseball. Listen, I know this isn't for everybody. Like the Eric Andre show. Do you know who Eric Andre is? Comedian.
Vaguely. Was he on the Impractical Jokers?
He just did an Impractical Jokers episode. Yeah. But he has a talk show, sort of, and it's just non sequitur, outlandish, like surrealist stuff that I think is hilarious, but I could understand someone watching like 10 seconds of it and being like, don't ever show that to me again. And so baseball is not quite that bad, but I feel like baseball has maybe at a stage for me where I'm like, look, I just like it. I'm not going to try to convince you why you should spend 3 hours watching a baseball game.
So as a fan, I would say I have a hard time with the regular seasons of sports. That it's like, get to the part where you determine a champion. The NBA playoffs, my daughter really likes the NBA. I'm pretty excited for the NBA playoffs. The level of talent, the depth and breadth of talent in the NBA right now, everybody knows, is crazy. And so it's like, oh, what's the first round of playoffs? It's like, Curry and Jokic and Donovan Mitchell versus Luka Doncic and Karl Anthony Towns and Anthony Edwards against Chris Paul and Devin Booker and... No, that one's not. No, that's CJ McCollum against the Suns. It's Karl Anthony Towns and those guys against Ja and the Grizzlies and like this Nets Celtics series and stuff. Like it is insane to me. But like NBA regular season, like why would you watch an NBA regular season game? Because everybody that's good makes the playoffs and the playoffs are unbelievable. But regular season, what are we doing? So, I do like, from a coverage standpoint, golf is, I watch the Masters on Sunday. I also get tired of sports. I like golf 5% as much as most sports writers do. Sports writers are the worst. And when sports writers just start tweeting about the Masters and Bruce Springsteen, I just want to punch every sports writer in the country in the face. It's like, the grass, shut your hole. God, be a person. But following golf like up close, I've been lucky enough. I covered the Masters 3 times. I covered the Memorial in Columbus a bunch of times. And when you get to walk inside the ropes and you're right there with guys, you know, and you get to see, I was following Tiger one time at the Masters and he had hit it right. And he was behind a tree in the pine straw and he took like a 3-wood and hit like a banana slice that I couldn't believe. And hit it like 260 yards on the green. And I was like, I don't know how a person physically did that. And the fact that it was standing 15 feet behind him when he did it, golf is fun to cover that way. I will say my experiences with the Browns, I really do like it. I really like roster building in the NFL. So I'm really interested in draft strategy. It's like recruiting stuff. I just like the strategy of it a lot. Then you watch the games to see if the strategy paid off. So getting to write about the Browns, when they tanked, which I was all in favor of, and the analytics of it and the draft strategy. And they just, you know, Denzel Ward just got $100 million contract. When do you sign guys? And what does it mean for your cap? That's just a different animal than college sports. So I really do like that. Nathan, is there something that as a reporter, and I've said this before, I covered the Olympics once. It was the greatest. I would cover it every 4 years. If I covered every 2 years, I'd cover them all if I could. Ridiculous. unbelievable, exhausting, but a great experience. What is like a thing that you love to cover? Because I do say, Nathan, when we came up, you got more opportunities to kind of cover random stuff. Everybody these days, the beats are so important and people know you. You're branded as a guy who covers this team and people come to you for that. So there's not as much back in the old days in your off season, you'd do a bunch of random stuff. You know, when I went, you know, I first got to Cleveland.com, I was the Ohio State writer. I covered the Kentucky Derby. I covered golf. I covered all kinds of weird, like whatever came down the pike in the off season. And that doesn't happen anymore. Was there something that hasn't been college sports that you found particularly interesting?
Well, I was going to say, as much as I have enjoyed covering college football, it watching March Madness again this year reminded me how much fun that is to cover. Because even when you're covering Ohio State, like you cover Ohio State in the playoffs, and I understand that when they lose, that fans are disappointed. But the stakes there are different because you've already achieved so much. You're the one of the final four teams, or you won one of the final four, and then you won one game, and now you're in the national championship. Like even getting there and losing like they did in 2019 still seemed like a season of great achievement. Whereas in basketball, not until I started covering college basketball did I realize how hard it is to just get to the tournament and then actually win games in the tournament. Like it's hard. And the stakes of like potentially losing with the upsets and everything, like there's just so much drama in really every round of the NCAA tournament that I think I miss that experience a little bit. And I've enjoyed watching that a lot as just a viewer the last, especially this past year. I thought it was a lot of fun. And my wife actually likes basketball more than she likes other sports. So it's something we can kind of watch together in a way, like she's not watching football and she's not watching baseball usually, unless it's the Cubs winning the World Series. Anything else she's not really into. But, and I also really, there are things about covering high school sports that I miss a little bit, like covering big late tournament high school playoff games was always a ton of fun too. Usually having to make a trip of like a couple hours. And it's a team from a part of the state that you don't really know that much. And just seeing new styles of play and things like that. And they're going up against but you're also still following the storyline of the team that you've been following all along. I miss some of that, like covering a team in that way.
I will say, I shouldn't say this, but I will because I don't care. There is a sports writer that I came across. This is going to make me sound like more of a jerk than most of my things make me sound like a jerk.
Ooh.
Should I even say it? Well, it's too late now. So it's like I ran across a sports writer that was a sports writer that covers high school sports and has covered high school sports his whole career. And he was like, oh, yeah, you know, I could have gone on and covered something else. But, you know, I just really like covering high school sports because it's just more pure and you really get to know the players. You can have access and stuff. And I was like, oh, yeah, you could be at the New York Times right now if you didn't love covering high school sports so much. Listen, we all covered high school sports on the way up. There are great aspects of covering high school sports. But if you're a high school sports reporter, save the I could have covered. I could be covering the Dallas Cowboys right now. But I love the purity of high school volleyball. Save it, dude. Just it's fine. It's great. We need high school sports writers. People care more about high school sports than they care about any other sport because it's their community and it's their school and it's their kids and their kids' friends and the neighbors and stuff. I'm not downgrading it, but just save that a little bit, dude. I was like, okay. But some of the best stuff that I've ever covered is high school stuff. I remember when I worked in Indiana, I covered a state football championship game and they had this little tiny quarterback, like a 5'8" quarterback. His last name was Finn, and I called him the Wee Finn throughout my game story, which I probably shouldn't have done. And he talked about like he did a quarterback sneak near the end of the game, like for the go-ahead touchdown. And I was like, how did you know if you were in or not? And he was like, I listened for the sound out of my ear holes, because if it was in my left ear hole, if that was where the sound was, I knew that I scored because my side was cheering. And if the sound was out my right ear hole, I knew I was short because it was their side cheering. And I was like, what's better than that? This little 5'8" guy sticking his head into the defensive line to try to score a go-ahead touchdown. So like that kind of stuff, when you are covering high school games that really matter, and it's one of those where, hey, we're going to sectionals and the whole town goes, my God, My daughter and I, for fun, went to a high school basketball game, one of the ones that Sonny Styles played in during the playoffs this year. Are you kidding me? You pack a gym like that, you can't even hear. Your ears are going to explode. That's as good as the Super Bowl or the March Madness or whatever. That atmosphere, which you know, Nathan, anybody listening to this knows it. There can be moments where that is as nerve-wracking and sweaty and important as any sporting event you will ever cover. So I miss covering high school sports? Because as anybody who's been in the business knows, covering high school sports is harder than covering college and pro sports because you're on your own and you got to do all the stats and the deadlines are crazy. It is incredibly difficult to cover high school sports. So I don't miss working that hard, but the drama of important high school sports games and the rivalries, woo, you don't beat it. You don't beat it.
Yeah. It's a different grind and you're dealing with, parents and coaches at a different level than you deal with them when you're covering college sports, obviously. And just the way that they're presented to the world is different too. But those moments like those, cause you know, also that you're documenting something that doesn't belong to the world in a way that the Rose Bowl does or a college playoff game does. You're covering, when I was in Indiana, it'd be like, Rensselaer High School against Fort Wayne Bishop Lures, and Rensselaer has met him at semi-state for like 3 years in a row and can't beat him. And now they're coming back to try it for a fourth year. And like, you know, that like in the lives of those people, it's this like inflection point. Like what they do that day is going to like resonate for them for the next stories they tell for the next 60 years of their life. So those things are, it's just fun. And I do miss it sometimes.
And you are documenting it. We are not providing information. Buckeye Talk. There's nobody that listens to this podcast that's like, oh, did Ohio State win on Saturday?
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? When you cover high school sports, you are conveying what happened to a large part of the audience. There are times where it's like, well, if I wasn't there, nobody would know. Honestly, sometimes you're the only person there. And there is a responsibility that comes with that. But there's also kind of like a cool, like, hey, I'm here for my people. I'm here for the beaters in my area. Like I'm actually, there's 80 people in an Ohio State press box. We're not, if we weren't here, what would happen? I don't know. I'd listen to some other podcast or read somebody else's story. We disappear in the wind. If a high school sports reporter doesn't go to the high school game, it's like all you get is the score. And then you can ask your friend, what happened? I don't know. I think that one number 11, I think had a touchdown catch. Like, what are you talking about? So there is a part of it that I don't want to convey that I don't have respect for high school sports reporters, because as we've said, it's incredibly valuable and incredibly difficult. I just thought that one guy was kind of a jackal. So, but the other thing is, baseball is dead to me. It's also the thing that I wanted to say. So I have to be careful with this because I don't want it to be dead to everybody. And just because it's dead to me doesn't mean it should be dead to everybody. And I probably will write about baseball again. I'm basically a football columnist at Cleveland.com at this point. I haven't written about baseball or basketball, at least pro basketball. You know, I do a little bit of Ohio State basketball here and there. I can't remember how long ago, but like I was there. I went to the World Series when it was the Cubs and the Indians back then. And I've written about the Cavs at times. So I don't want to like put myself in a position where people would like not take my opinion because like, well, that guy hates baseball, because I know some people like it, but I was once like you. Baseball was my favorite sport. And I think baseball has done the exact wrong thing, basically in every way, that the ways that it has evolved has made it worse. And the ways it has not evolved has made it worse. So it's like, how is baseball different than it used to be? And it's like, oh, there's no more closers and all the starters go 4 1/3 innings and every at bat is either a walk or a home run. It's like, awesome. What's the same about baseball? It's 3.5 hours long. It's 162 games. It's slow. Like, oh, none of that's changed? Nope, that's all the same. So it's like, why would I watch this? Is it entertaining? If you don't have a team in your heart that you love, like, would you watch a baseball game, Nathan, a Major League Baseball game that was not involving the team that you love?
Oh, I regularly do, yes. But it, do. I was one admitting that I may have just that mental illness of people who are just that sport has burrowed into their brain. But I don't disagree with everything you're saying, and I think it's a sport that has a terrible, not length of game problem, but pace of play problem. And it's a sport that has been tied to its traditions to its detriment. And I think you can make mistakes. I think there's other entities in American life that have made the mistake of shedding all of their tradition and trying to be too hip or too new. And that hurts them too. You make a worse product that pushes away all of your most loyal fans. That doesn't make sense to me. But I think there's a way that baseball could make a more appealing product without compromising its its essence.
I do think, though, in the end, and maybe I've been footballicized, but every football game matters so much. And every baseball game, every Major League Baseball game matters so little. It's like, oh, my team lost today. Oh, what does that mean? Nothing. Literally nothing.
It's literally nothing. It's crazy to think about like how much of baseball's history where one team from the American League and one team from the National League met in the World Series. That was the postseason. Like, you don't get stakes bigger than that for every single game that you play. And now they just keep adding teams onto the playoff. It seems like every year they're adding, pretty soon it's going to be a 32-team tournament.
And somehow they think that keeping the same length of the regular season but adding playoff teams is better. It lessens the relevance of every single thing you do. Why would you watch? So it's not entertaining and it doesn't matter. Why would anyone watch a baseball game in May? It's not entertaining and it doesn't matter. Baseball. Also, wait, let me do that again, because I'm going to pull this out. It's not entertaining and it doesn't matter. Buckeye talk. Okay. Sorry. I just want to make sure I did that. Like, because again, even like, again, your answer is, I don't know. I agree with you. I just like it anyway. I get it.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I would push back on the not entertaining part, except there are certainly games where, you know, somebody's up 9-1 after three innings. What are you watching for the next six innings? Are you going to sit around for the next 2 hours and hope you get to see a really cool home run, or somebody hits a triple and it's a fun thing to watch? Like, it's just... But at that point, I think across all sports, you're probably only keeping diehards glued to the TV at that point anyway.
So anyway, I would love for baseball to get me back. And I don't know if I speak for a lot of people in my generation or not. I think maybe you might be more common that you still just love it anyway. I obviously know in the younger generation, you know, there's probably not that people that are interested. So I don't know what they're going to do, but I feel like they have lost their way so dramatically and they're so out of touch. And the thing that would do it is like, you just have to, scarcity makes things interesting. That's why they don't have the McRib 12 months a year. Baseball is 12 months of McRib. And if you have 12 months of McRib, at some point you're like, this is just mediocre pork slathered in bad sauce. Now you're going to stand up for the McRib and for baseball.
Well, no, I was actually going to say, a friend of mine, Wett Moser, wrote a piece about this when he worked for the Chicago Reader, I think, and somebody else has written a piece, and maybe he was even writing off of somebody else's piece, but as to why they only do the McRib certain times of the year. Do you want to know why?
It's because that's when the pigs die.
Do you actually eat the McRib? I guess that's actually the first question. Okay.
I do not.
It has to do with basically there is pork in it, but it's also a lot of like, you know, tripe and whatever else. And it's like, because those things, in order for the price to be super low on that, they don't want to raise the demand on the McRib. Like, they don't, if they served it all year round, the price of all the crap that they process together into those little rib looking things would go up. So they just take it at the bottom dollar price and only serve it part of the year. I will go eat a McRib tomorrow, too, so you know.
But would you eat it every day if it was always available? Baseball does not understand scarcity at all.
Listen, I'm 44. I'd like to see this unborn son of mine go to kindergarten. So I probably would not eat one every day. I'll probably eat a McRib again before I die.
I think it's not that it's underrated. People know this, but it's like people like the violence of football. They like the skill of football, all those kinds of things. They like the atmosphere. You go tailgate and all that stuff. But also football, the scarcity of football is perfect. Once a week, it's everything's special, and you start to crave it. You never crave baseball. Baseball doesn't take a long enough break for you to crave it. So I would like to crave baseball again, but I fear that I never will. We will take a quick break, come back, talk a little bit about the safeties next on Buckeye Talk. Doug and Nathan, these are connected from the 567. That's our guy Anthony in Findlay. Hey, Buckeye Talk, I know this is something that's been mentioned in the past, but I want to revisit it. For the majority of 2020, Marcus Hooker was the starting free safety and Josh Proctor was the slot/nickel safety. I love the idea of Proctor playing at that nickel safety role again and playing Court Williams and Ronnie Hickman at the two deeper safety spots. No shade to Tanner McAllister, but I think those are the three most talented safeties on the team. I want the best 11 defenders to play. Maybe not week one, but I'd like to see that personnel at some point this season. Can this happen? Will this happen? What are your thoughts? And then a companion question from the 312. Can we talk about Hickman and Proctor? Last year, we thought Proctor was showing signs of a breakout at free safety. Hickman was our best defender playing strong safety. Now those two are flip-flopping and no one is questioning it. Did they have it wrong last year? Are they about to make a big mistake this year? Why isn't this a bigger deal? Questions, basically, where should they put Josh Proctor? How do you take all that in, Nathan?
I understand what they're asking. This is, I don't know which of these things to talk about first. So it's obviously a completely different defense than what they started with last year. But I understand why someone would say, well, if you thought Josh Proctor was a single high safety, why isn't he still what is most closely resembles the free safety in this defense? And if you thought, if you needed a free safety last year, why didn't Ronnie Hickman play it after Josh Proctor got hurt? I think the best answer for all of that is it's difficult to look at it through the lens of Ohio State making a mistake currently, because it's a completely new group of people making the evaluations. It's a completely new defensive scheme overseen by Jim Knowles, who is making evaluations of all these players. It is a new safeties coach in Perry Eliano. It is a new secondary coach in Tim Walton. It's like, it's a completely new apparatus that is now looking at these players, pluses and negatives, and deciding where they should go. The other wrinkle that does have to get involved here too with Proctor specifically is he's coming off a broken leg. And I don't know if that changes what position you think he is best suited to play, but he and Hickman have both talked about them seeing the bandit and the adjuster as very similar, interchangeable. The biggest difference, I think, for the adjuster is that you're going to just have to make a lot more calls. Everything's happening in front of you, and you're the one who's responsible for calling things out. And again, which one of those two guys would you want back there this spring to do that? I'd probably do the one who could actually practice. So that would be Ronnie Hickman. We'll see how they line up in the fall. But as it stands right now, just that Proctor Hickman question, I think it's a very smart question and something to wonder about, and maybe something for us to even ask Jim Knowles and Ryan Day about eventually. But it also is that their relative configuration to each other was not something that I thought was necessarily strange, because I think Ronnie Hickman, as much as they like made him the bullet last year, and we always thought of the bullet being linebacker safety hybridish, that wasn't really ever what happened. He's always seemed kind of like a safety to me, and to put him at this adjuster spot still seems very much in line with his skill set.
So I think if you think of the adjuster, the free safety spot, more as a rangy sideline to sideline guy like Malik Hooker, then I think you think Josh Proctor. If you think of the adjuster free safety spot more as a captain of the defense, get everybody lined up in the back seven, and be the last line of defense to make a tackle as an eraser like Jordan Fuller, then I think you think Ronnie Hickman. I think Ronnie Hickman's more like Jordan Fuller. I think Josh Proctor might be more like Malik Hooker. And Ohio State has played different styles of free safeties. It feels like the way Jim Knowles has talked, he really likes Ronnie Hickman as the guy making sure everything's lined up. And that Ronnie Hickman just is suited to that role. And that part of it makes sense to me. But also there's going to be times where they're just kind of like split safeties and they're doing the same thing on the opposite, or depending if a guy goes in motion, right? The slot receiver goes in motion or a tight end goes in motion. And now Hickman drops down and Proctor drops back and you're given a different look and you have to be able to do both. It's a matter of maybe who does one a little more often. So I think you're right that they are similar, but I think it's just, you have to think, because if you're thinking of Malik Hooker, it's like, well, who's the closest to Malik Hooker? It's probably Josh Proctor, but that's not what they're thinking of. I think they're thinking of Jordan Fuller. And then just think of a guy who's going to make the last line of defense kind of tackle and be super smart. And then I think you think, oh, no, yeah, Ronnie Hickman, that sounds good to me.
As that first question suggests, though, I mean, Josh Proctor also came in more as a strong safety and was someone that they were then trying to convert to having the intangibles and the skills necessary to be that single high free safety. And it was always kind of an awkward fit, so much so that people remember in 2020, he was not a starter in that defense. It was Marcus Hooker who was at the back end of that defense for most of that season.
Right.
So
as the texter said, yeah.
So I understand where they're coming from. I also think though, man, I want to make sure that we're not getting out ahead of ourselves on Court Williams being one of this team's three best safeties for sure. And certainly I want to make sure that, kind of going back to our conversation before that we were talking about in the transfer concept, where are you thinking of this guy as what he is, or are you thinking about this guy as what you thought he would be? I think Court Williams can still be very good, but I just don't know if right now he deserves to be one of the three best safeties on the field. I don't know that he doesn't. We didn't get to see him in the spring game. We haven't got to see him very much at all throughout his Ohio State career. So that's another thing that I would pump the brakes on that a little bit. And especially to the point where you would think about taking the guy who has been apparently not, I wouldn't say the prototype for what Jim Knowles wants in a nickel safety, but a guy who certainly has done it now for multiple years and now happens to be in your room, to take him off the field and have Proctor in a little bit more of a, because I know that he did some similar things before, but I don't know if that necessarily means that's what he'd be doing as a nickel safety in this defense. Because Jim Knowles has talked about,
but wouldn't they be covering slots?
Yeah, but Jim Knowles has also talked about like wanting, being open to taking cornerbacks and converting them to that kind of position.
No, I know, but it's a coverage guy. But that's the whole point. The cover safety needs coverage skills, which is why Court Williams can't play it. The idea that the texter outlined is what I want. That's what I want. That I want Josh Proctor to eventually beat out Tanner McAllister, be the starting cover safety, and have Court Williams at the bandit and Ronnie Hickman at the adjuster. That's what I want, because Court Williams can't play Nicholson. You need coverage skills. And I like, if Josh Proctor, and you talked to Josh Proctor, and you worried about Josh Proctor, and did not Dax Hill's name come up in that conversation?
Well, because I brought it up, yeah.
But Dax Hill, who's from Oklahoma like Josh Proctor, who is in this NFL draft, who Mel Kiper just talked about the other day, is moving up. He thinks he's going to go in the top 20 potentially. Dax Hill played some cover, some nickel corner. So Dax Hill has some deep stuff, but he's got some covered stuff that makes him really attractive to the NFL. I think of the three guys that we're talking about, I think Josh Proctor has the best coverage skills. So again, I'm probably underrating Tanner McAllister, and I'll get a text just like I got about Mayan Williams. I'm underrating Tanner McAllister, but I like that. I think if Tanner McAllister at his All-American ceremony can pull this up, and I apologize. If your three best safeties are Hickman, Williams, and Proctor has to be the guy who's the cover safety.
Yeah, I think that might be right, because then I don't know if it goes back to what I was saying about Emeka Egbuka in the receiver room. Like, does it really make sense just to make him your backup slot and he plays very sparingly? Like, no, you've got to get him on the field more than that, right? Like, he's too dynamic. So I think you're probably right that they would have to do something like that. I would just say, I like what you're saying. What you're saying is very intriguing as like maybe the best version of Ohio State's defense if that comes to fruition. I am just not ready to say that I know today that Court Williams would be better at that job than Tanner McAllister would be at his job as the nickel safety.
Because when we early on, like the first time we talked to Jim Knowles this spring, and after we had seen it, it looked like that it was like Court Williams. It was when Ronnie Hickman moved to the adjuster, moved to free safety, and Court Williams was at band at strong safety. And it was like, oh, Ronnie Hickman at the deep safety. And I wrote about this, and he was like, I want Ronnie Hickman and Court Williams on the field together. Now, this was before Josh Proctor was doing much, but Jim Knowles said that. So he's trying. There's scheme, and then there's personnel, and you've got to fit your personnel to your scheme. You've got the scheme has to bring out the best of your personnel, but you also have to find a way. If this is my best personnel, I've got to jam them in the scheme one way or another. I like Josh Proctor's coverage skills, and I think Josh Proctor, on occasion, trying to lock up slot receivers might help him with his draft status rather than just being back there floating all the time. So that's how I see it. But from the moment that Jim Knowles said that and everything then that happened the rest of the spring led us away from any of that. And the other thing might be, listen, Tanner McAllister, Jim Knowles loves him. Dude was going to go to the NFL, decided to come to Ohio State instead. You can't have Tanner McAllister show up and then like in the third practice be like, yeah, you're a backup. Right?
Right.
You've got to let this. And plus they wanted him. They all the coaches multiple times called him a coach on the field. Tanner McAllister helped them install this thing. Is he one of their three best safeties in week six? Maybe, but I'm not a hard yes on that right now.
No, I am
window open on week six, the three best safeties being Hickman, Williams, Proctor. And if that's the case, Proctor has to be the cover safety.
If they think he can do it, yeah, I think that's not necessarily a given though that they think he can, that they might think the skills there are different enough that they don't like him as much there.
But he has done it before. But Proctor has done that before.
Sort of, yes, but not as like a starting DB in the defense though. Like it was, the role was different. At least like there was some nuance different.
A little bit.
And I would also say, Knowles did say that early in camp about wanting them both on the field at the same time. That was when he had really only seen Josh Proctor on film. And as the spring went on, he said this after the spring game, every time he saw Josh Proctor do more, it made him want to see more of Josh Proctor. And he was starting to get really excited by the end of camp of what Josh Proctor is. So that's the other thing to keep in mind here too, that like when Court Williams was the one that was healthy and playing, that looked good. And then when Josh Proctor was the one who was healthy and playing, maybe that looked better. We'll see. I'm really intrigued by what happens with that safety arrangement by opening day. I'm intrigued by how it holds through the next 13 weeks.
And let's add one more safety question here to wrap up this not so rapid fire. It's from our guy, Jamie in Victoria, Canada. I like the comparison between Kai Stokes and Denzel Burke. What are the chances Stokes gets real playing time this year? He looked great in the spring game and lost his black stripe early. Thanks. I know we have touched on this, Nathan, but there's always two parts of the equation. There's what the player can do, and there's the opportunities that are presented to him. So how does a Kai Stokes, Denzel Burke comparison fit into that?
As good as Denzel Burke was last year, we have to remember the circumstances that made him a starter. Like, I don't know if Seven Banks had a completely normal offseason and was completely healthy to start the year, and if Cam Brown is completely healthy to start the year, I don't know that Denzel Burke is starting on opening day. Maybe he would have, because he was flashing and he was doing good things. He was impressing the coaches. They were talking about him. That was real, and he clearly deserves to be on the field. I'm not saying. I'm just saying that I think it was a combination of things. He was coming at a point where they had a desperate need for somebody to play that spot, as evidenced by the fact that, you know, Ryan Watts and Legend Cavazos and some guys who weren't quite ready were getting forced into action early last year. So could that happen with Stokes? I suppose, but it would mean that one of those guys that we were just talking about isn't available.
Yeah, the opportunity, it would take some unexpected things for Kai Stokes to get the same kind of opportunity that Denzel had last fall and then seized and never let go of.
It would probably mean that two of those three guys, two of Proctor, Hickman, and Williams, were not ready to start the year for whatever reason.
Right. Right. And you might want to. Right. No, I think that's right. By the way, Seven Banks again, a year ago at this time when we, you know, again, I like the early mock draft. Mock draft 2027. I like it. It's fun. Sports should be fun. It's okay to say silly things when you're predicting stuff and you have almost no chance of getting it right. Doesn't mean you shouldn't do it because we're supposed to have fun with this stuff. Remember like a year ago when you'd look at mock drafts and like, oh, I saw a mock draft that had Seven Banks going 29th. I was like, what? And we were like, again, there are these players where we have these conflicts that are like, am I a crazy person? Because my view of this person is not what some other people's view is. I do think I was always thought there was this group of people that seemed to overrate Seven Banks, who was a fine corner when he played. He was. But like, I didn't know that Seven Banks, I don't know that anything Seven Banks on the field ever did was like, yep, next in line, DBU. It was like, he's good, he's fine. I'm reading something. Apparently, there's some crystal balls. He's in the transfer portal. Again, add him to the list. But again, it was like no one was dreading that. It was like, okay, it just didn't work out here for him. Maybe LSU.
Yeah,
Brian Kelly, apparently that. Interested for Seven Banks. So we'll keep an eye on that. All right. That was kind of, I was going to say it was all over the place, but it was actually in three places. It was in transferring. It was in baseball. And it was in safety play. So I'll have a good time trying to make a headline for this one. Thanks to you guys for being part of it. I think the plan is this, that we're going to pull Steven off of his time off for the Wednesday pod, where we will put the Ohio State draft guys on the clock, and then we will buzz in when we are ready to draft them. So that will give you our slightly educated guesses on where we think Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave, Nicholas Petit-Frere, Haskell Garrett, Thayer Munford, Jeremy Ruckert, where all these guys are going to be picked, and Steven will be part of that. That is the plan for the Wednesday pod. If news happens, then we'll push that back. We're going to do that before the draft. We think we want to do it this week. So thanks, you guys, for making us part of your day. We'll take the reviews. We'll take you reading cleveland.com/OSU. We'll take you trying to text at 614-350-3315. I have a little thing that I might write. I'm definitely going to text it out at the end of the pod. Denzel Burke wishes someday. Denzel Ward got $100 million contract, $71 million guaranteed from the Browns on Monday afternoon. Congratulations to Denzel Ward for that. But he joins the list of some Ohio State dudes making money in the NFL. So, you know, maybe we'll do something with that sometime. But for now, he's Nathan Baird. I'm Doug LaMaurice. And that was Buckeye Talk.